Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.
Back with another edition of the Writer's Block here on LA Talk Radio. I am not Jim Christina. I just play him on
television.
That's
right. I'm not Bobby Jean Bell either.
So the JV team has stepped in tonight. I am Richard Polinelli. Usually I'm the third mentioned co-host, but tonight they've given control of the ship to me, and we're already off to a very strange start. So why not? Let's see what happens. With me tonight is Russ Abison. So he'll keep a calm hand on the rudder, I hope, because there's no way in the world I'm going to. So, Russ, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I think I'm in better shape than you.
Well, you know, as of about, 90 seconds ago, it was me, myself, and I and Sam in the studio, and we're thinking, okay, what's plan, you know, Z at this point? But it has all worked out. We do have our guest with us tonight. And he's got a very interesting book that we're going to be discussing. As we go tonight, if you would like to call in and ask him a question, you can do so by calling 323-203-0815. And Sam will get you on, and you can ask us anything you like, with the exception of who let the dogs out. We don't want to hear that. No, we're not going to do that. So why don't we get into it tonight? Our guest is Jesse Sternberg. He has written a book called Enlightened Dog Training, Become the Peaceful Alpha Your Dog Needs and Respects. It is his first book, and I'm always excited to have a first-time author on because there's so much we'd like to ask first-timers to kind of see how the process went for him. So we're going to dive right into it. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure having you on. You're in luck because this week the co-host in the studio is a dog trainer. So I'm expecting to sit back and glean all this wonderful information from you two before we're done tonight. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what the book is about? I mean, we know it's about dog training, but it's not what you would consider, you know, standard.
It's not your standard dog training book at all.
Okay.
It's actually more of a mindfulness book. Packaged as a dog training book. I wanted to inspire all of the dog owners on how to connect and communicate with their dog, basically from their dog's frame of reference, which is the eternal present moment, the now. And I wanted to enlighten people on how smart and attuned our dogs are. And maybe that's part of the miscommunication. They're frustrated with us. And maybe their behaviors that we're trying to fix are just them acting out their feelings. And we do the same thing. And if we understood that, we'd understand our dog a bit better. And it's that's the book.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to fess up because I've had one of those years this week. And today has just been a continuation. I've read about 2/3 of the book. So I'm going to have to go back. And I do want to go back and finish it. Because you mentioned a lot of things that I wish I had known about it a year ago when we adopted our two puppies. But, you know, where were you a year ago when I needed you? But it struck me as I was reading the book, is not only are we training your dog, you are training yourself. Uh-huh. And was that something you intended to do when you sat down to write this?
Yeah, that's what took me so long to do it. To do it just in simple language and common sense and almost like a eureka, aha, huh, and not to be a jerk about it. You know, just we're all human and none of us know any of these little secrets.
Yeah. It's now I at the beginning of the book, I think you're talking about when you first got into the business of doing a doggy daycare. And the one that struck me was your normal clientele was 15 dogs. But sure. there was a series of weather, and all of a sudden you're dealing with 36. How in the world do you handle 36 dogs in one shot like that?
I got to be honest with you, it was crazy. And I wasn't even a dog trainer at the time and didn't even want to be a dog trainer at the time. I wanted to be a businessman. Mm-hmm. I wanted to own a dog grooming, dog training center. In Toronto, there was no zoning that allowed that kind of use. I rented an old movie rental store and just converted it into an indoor dog playground. And to get around zoning bylaw, I pretended it was a training and grooming center. And I was all in on this project. This was a passion business. I was already just doing this because it was what I wanted to do. I got the lightning bolt of inspiration. I followed my heart on it. And so I was in this business from 6:30 a.m. until 7 p.m., 6.5 days a week. So it was me that had the handle on the 15 dogs, and it was a different perspective. I wanted them to be calm and cool and quiet and not barking at the door so I could answer the phone and look like I run a good establishment. Mm-hmm. And I think the passion in me had me studying every kind of dog training methodology available at the time. I kind of joke sometimes. I'm like, if Dr. Phil and Caesar Millan had a baby, that would kind of be me. But I've studied all different kinds of dog training methodologies, and I would play around in my laboratory with these dogs for 8-10 hours a day while the business was running. I mean, I quickly came to see that you can do almost any kind of dog training methodology works with you when you got one dog at a time. Mm-hmm. But when you got 15 dogs at a time, you're not practicing anymore. You're game time. Everything is game time. And what really started to make sense to me was how they related to each other around special objects that would have power at a specific moment in time, the water bowl, the Kong, the tennis ball, the crack of the door where the staff would walk through, mm-hmm. all various types of things. I also started to pay attention to their body language and study their calming signals ad nauseum. And I would meditate with them, you guys. I would sit. The best part of my day was when the 25 dogs would like snuggle into the floor, into my chair, into the corner of the room, in like we were a herd of cattle out on a field. And that's a vibe you can't explain. And when I got into that and when I learned all about that, all I wanted to do was preserve that.
Okay. Russ, you're the resident dog trainer, so I'm gonna let you jump in here and ask away.
Well, you know, first of all, I after reading the book and now listening to you speak, I know you and I are on the same page as far as how to work with dogs. I'm a 100% positive dog trainer. No choke chains, no pinch collars, anything like that. And so much of what you're saying, I wholeheartedly believe. Most of it I've had proven to me at different times. Mm-hmm. The problem, and I'm glad you put it in a book, because when you're teaching a class and you try and start talking to a group of people about, the Zen of dog, doesn't come across too well to everyone. So to have it in a book is a nice way to have it, because you can recommend it to somebody and say, here, read this. I think you get a better understanding of your dog. And it's not coming from me. So maybe, if they don't like what they mm-hmm. read in the book, they can say, okay, well, Russ, I read it and I still want to listen to you, but that's okay. I was really surprised to hear that your day could end at 6:30, because our place is boarding. So we are 24/7, so I don't get any rest.
Oh yeah. No, I would take them home with me to my then ex-wife.
Oh yeah, okay.
And they would live. It didn't turn off. But yeah, you can't board them in a retail shop in Canada and Toronto overnight. I would have found a way.
Yeah. Well, we're fortunate. We have a 20-acre ranch here, so our place is all cage-free. And the dogs, actually, we keep dogs in groups of two, three, or four rather than all together. And it makes it a little calmer because you don't have, you know, the pack mentality of all of a sudden setting something off. But, and we do want to get into how you wrote the book and what your method was for getting your ideas out on the page, because I've wanted to do that. And I am not a writer, so I'm very impressed with what you've done.
Thank you.
But a couple things in the book, some I just want to ask you if you'd explain, because I thought they were really interesting concepts. Close to the beginning of the book, you talked about eye contact and how in the animal world, and particularly the dog world, direct eye contact is an aggressive posture. Go ahead.
Did you have your question or was that?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have you elaborate on a little more. But one of the things you also talked about, you know, the myth about putting the back of your hand out to a dog and hoping that that's going to calm the dog, which all these are true. And I've always told my students about, you know, that the two things, you know, when you meet a human being, the two things you do is you look them straight in the eye and you put out your hand to shake hands. And those are two things that are totally contrary to the way a dog would respond. So I just wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on that.
Okay, cool. I love that. All right. So I actually call this in a direct eye contact hold scenario, that creates a feeling of contrast. It creates an emotional feeling of contrast. And I'm suggesting that animals go into that angle on purpose. For righteous reasons. They go into that angle, the direct eye contact angle, before a fight. They go into that around, you know, the front of the cave, don't come into my territory kind of thing. They go into that over resource guarding. That's basically what resource guarding is, without the social etiquette. And every single calming signal, which are like a blink, a look away, a duck the head down, a lay down, a sit down. These are all postures that either play to that angle and say, I'm breaking the angle, and they're doing it on purpose, or a lip lick, which is a gesture they make as a response to that angle. So in real time, in present moment, moment to moment to moment to moment to moment to moment, when you watch the dogs lay down or rest or stand, they're angling themselves on purpose. Because they've got this broadband consciousness, they're so good at looking out of the corner of their eye that they will, in a resting state, in a non-playful state, they will hang out in a body angle where their head isn't on that line. And they will move into that line when the Amazon man comes to the front door. And, okay, so that's sort of, let's just put that on the back burner for a minute. And let's say... let's say a beautiful woman's at a bar and she walks in and and I'm sitting and somebody's sitting in the back corner and he takes notice to her and he for some reason can't take his eyes off of her. She can feel that. She can feel that burning through the back of her head. In fact, she doesn't like it. Okay. And so let's play another scenario. When I was a kid and my dad said, okay, when this man reaches out his hand and looks at you, you have to make eye contact and reach your hand out. I didn't like it. It felt so awkward for me. It wasn't natural for me to do that. And the reason is because this angle creates contrast. And it can be used to intimidate. It can be used to scare. It can be used to make a strong point when you're telling the truth. It can be used when you're making passionate love. But when you learn how to use that angle with your dog, you can snap your finger and look at your dog and they'll never bite your purse again. They'll never steal your sock again. You can do it from across the room.
Yeah. Guys, I'm going to jump in real quick because it's time for us to take a break. So grab a sip of water or whatever adult beverage you might have handy. In the meantime, we're going to hear from the good people at LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. You know, for years I've been telling you about the benefits of LA Talk Radio and how easy it is to get your own show. Well, today is no different. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the button that says Become a Host, and punch that button, fill out the easy-to-find form, and Mr. Sam Hassan will be delighted to walk you through the rest of it. And before you know it, you'll be broadcasting live worldwide right here on LA Talk Radio. We're not just a podcast. We are live radio. So why not go there? Go to latalkradio.com, find the button that says Become a Host, and become your own host on your own live radio show right here at LA Talk Radio.
Okay, and we are back on the Writer's Block. Our guest is Jesse Sternberg.
You know, wait, I got to tell you, Jim just mentioned about us being worldwide. Uh-huh. I didn't know that. I just peed myself a little.
Well, you will not get a special treat tonight, sir. You're going to be in this doggy sand bin after that. If you are considering getting your own show here on LA Talk Radio, but you're kind of concerned because you've never done anything like that, 5 years ago, neither had I, and here I am. So, you know, don't let the fear get to you and keep you from giving it a shot. Jesse, I do have a quick question that I want to let Russ get back to what you were talking about. You mentioned that dogs are very intuitive. And I'm one of those people that I get out of a car or I walk in somebody's house and here comes whatever dog is in that house directly at me. Mm. I had a guy who he had a dog and I stepped out of the truck and I just kind of waved at the dog, said, "Hey, boy." And he goes, "Oh, that dog doesn't like anybody. He won't even come to me. Well, 5 seconds later, that dog is sitting at my knee getting petted and scratched on the belly. And the guy's like, "How do you do that?" So I'm wondering, what is it about people that dogs tune in on where in some cases they want to go be with that person and in other cases they don't want anything to do with that person?
Well, this is all speculation because I haven't seen you with a dog come up to you. But one of the things that a dog is looking at when it's meeting a new person, Let's say I'm the dog and you walk in on the scene, okay? If the owner is saying something broad-based, like my dog doesn't go up to all people, I'm categorizing its temperament not as confident, not as exuberant, not as overexcitable, but I'm putting it in the category of shy, okay? And now, next thing I'm thinking of is where in the room is the dog and where are you and where is the owner? If the dog's feeling safe if the dog is led to feel safe by your actions, your impression from the moment you walk into the room, in other words, you're not staring at it, you're not reaching out at it, you're not himmy-hawing, getting it all jazzed, well, that's going to scare the shit out of a scared dog, okay? So you're probably doing all of the right stuff.
Okay. It's first time in your life, huh? Yeah, I got to stop that. I can't, you know, if I don't screw something up, it's not right.
If you get low to the ground, if you turn your body on a 45-degree angle away from the dog, you're inviting it to come to you.
Okay, good. Yeah. I honestly don't remember what I was doing at the time. It just struck me as odd that this guy could never get the dog to go to anybody, and I couldn't get the dog to leave me alone. It was just odd. Russ, you've been dealing with dogs for, you know, God knows how long.
He's the only one.
you two were talking earlier about, how you train the dogs. And I'm just wondering, how do you go from a dog you've never worked with to being able to train it to where, you know, the owner and the dog can have a happy life together?
You know, there's some interesting things. Jesse, you were mentioning about seeing the woman in a bar and staring at her and how she could feel it even if she's not looking at you. People think this is crazy, but there's an energy out there. We all exude some sort of energy. And I use the example of being in at a dinner party at somebody's home. There's a lot of people around and someone comes to the front door and they come in through the door. And you look at them, you've never seen that person before, you have no idea who they are, and immediately you go, "I don't like them." There's something coming off that person that tells you, I'm not comfortable with this person. And dogs are really intuitive in that respect.
Okay, this is my favorite part because this segues into like the whole essence of my book, which is your dog is your reflection. And when you're at home, with your dog, but you're not engaging with your dog. You're just being you. You're like, you're eating a sandwich, you're on the phone, you're getting a text, you're doing your fantasy football. You're having these, oh crap, oh my God, LeBron, bad, blah, blah, blah. You know, you're having these emotional reactions. Well, your dog is emotionally intelligent. It is an empath and they mimic your responses, okay? And so their nuances, all their garbage, it's just a reflection of our own baggage. And so every chapter in my book is a character. It's a real life character. It's a real dog. It's a real problem that people always call about with the dog. But the main idea here is, you know, has anybody ever asked a dog trainer, what's a good dog? What's the definition? What are we trying to make here? In my opinion, give me a calm dog and I don't care where it goes. It's good. And I don't care what's happening. It's good. Yeah, exactly. Give me a fly. You're right. Give me a fly on the wall. Give me a fly on the wall, and everyone's going to comment about that dog is so good. He had, and that dog has free reign. That dog has the long leash. That dog has expanded consciousness because it has been exposed to all different kinds of scenarios, and he just knows what is expected, which is what I'm going to. Which is basically what I call standing still, sitting down, laying down, and putting the chin down. If you're doing any of those things, dog, you're a good dog.
Yeah.
Have either of you had an untrainable dog?
Well, I don't know what you mean by untrainable, but I haven't had a home run on every single case.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it. I like that. I think that when you're faced with a real difficult case, I've never had a dog that I couldn't have some progress with, which, it, like you say, you might get first base or second base, but you haven't had a home run with every dog. I really like that analogy. That's great. You know, I wanted to, you know, a couple things that I found. I've been training dogs. I don't know how long you've been doing it, but I've been doing it for about 23 years. And a lot of things that I studied when I first got into the business has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
And one of them in particular, they used to refer to something called social facilitation. In other words, if you read any of the science books, they would say, okay, dogs don't learn by watching another dog do something. What they would say is, well, if one dog, let's say, runs up to the fence and they want it, and the fence could give a little bit if they push on it, so the dog learns how to push and get under the fence, another dog will come in and follow him. And they say, oh, look, he learned to do the same thing. No, they called it social facilitation. They just followed the other dog and that's what happened. But now they know there's something called mimicry where one dog can actually learn and copy the behavior of another dog. So because people used to say to me, oh, my one dog taught the new dog how to do this or how to do that. Mm-hmm. And because of all the science that I had behind me, I thought, nah, they're not. They're just kind of doing the same thing. But now we know they really do. So when you think your dog is like showing the dog where to go to the bathroom or, you know, where the treats are kept in the house or whatever it is that they want to learn, they actually do learn it from the other dog. And that's just one of the cases. So, you know, dog training is evolving. It's changing. And the reason I wanted to bring that up, and I know, Jesse, you agree with this, is because it used to be like, you know, the Keeler method of training, which was, you know, string them up and beat them and choke chains and all this stuff, this aversive punishment. And we know now that that doesn't really work anywhere near as well as using positive methods. And you mentioned Cesar Millan earlier. I'm not a big fan of his, but I am really glad that he came onto the scene because he has taken dog training and brought it to the forefront of people's minds. More and more people now realize they need to train their dogs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just for the record too, don't try to copy what Cesar Millan does. He's a rare breed. and he works with dogs on the spectrum. And so everything he does, it's not real life. It's supernatural. And the risks are crazy. But I have to say, I learned about the forbidden angle from him because that's just about all he does. All he does is the forbidden angle. Now, what I talk about a lot is after you make that eye contact, your dog's going to have a symphony of communication to you. And I never see really Caesar responding to that nor talking about this. That's why I didn't want to get into that too much, nor have I really watched any of his stuff in the last 10 years.
Same here.
But the Dr. Phil piece, which is, I think, the more interesting piece, which is like, do you even know that dogs have actions that make three different kinds of feelings on purpose? They're making pleasure, they're making neutral, or they're making what I call fear or contrast. And they're making neutral, which is like what nature is, which is tranquility, which is like the vibration of the earth resonance, which is like why they vibe out when they're lying on their stomach with their chin down. They make that 95% of the time. So if we learn how to make that with our body language, which is basically just stand 45 degrees off center of your dog all the time, that when you actually add love or excitement, it means something to them. It means something to them right now. And if you get in the habit of not praising them for doing specific behaviors, but if you get into the habit of praising them for making good decisions, decisions like, okay, I told you to back down and you moved back and then you sat down and then you laid down and then you put your chin down. It, you know, that's called the sequence of surrendering. And they're going to do that sequence. It's good to know this because Caesar doesn't talk about this either. And I don't see him responding to this either. But let's say, you know, let's say the doorbell rings and now you and your dog are both walking to the door. Your dog's running to the door and you're walking to the door, you know. If you snap your finger and you make that little eye contact at your dog, even though you're walking calmly, even though he's there first, he's going to start moving backwards. That's all you want him to do. After he starts moving backwards and you tell him good job, he's naturally going to stand still, then sit down, then lay down, then put his chin down. They do this all the time. They do this every single time. This is what I call the sequence of surrendering. And I make sure that I teach my dog that because as they're going through these motions, it's a response to either being too excited. You set a boundary when they were too excited. And so they make this response. They move backwards. It's retreat, or they stand still. And then they sit down, lay down, chin down. Each one of those actions they take is a progression of getting more peaceful.
You know, and it strikes me from reading the book, you have to have patience. Not only with the dog, but with the process, because you can't pick up your book or anybody's book, read it, do one day's worth of training and expect, okay, we're set, right? You've got to come long-term,
absolutely.
Right?
To cognize these types of body language things and then incorporate them and have them come out of you, mm-hmm. like unconsciously, competently, give yourself a minute to do that.
Yeah, it's taken us, we adopted two puppies from a shelter who were born in the shelter. And we've had them now for, I want to say 14 months. And we're still working with them on some things. But there are some things I'm noticing, and especially since reading the book, that they're doing without me ever having to say a word. Mm-hmm. They know what they're supposed to do, when they're supposed to do it, how they're supposed to do it. And in response, they're getting more and more, you know, freedom to do this or freedom to do that. Or so, you know, it's taken a while. And it dawned on me reading your book. That's what you have to come into puppy training, especially with puppies, is you can't expect instant results. I mean, would you guys agree with that?
1,000,000%.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the two things I tell my students in classes, the two keys to a successful novice trainer, patience and consistency. Mm-hmm. Those are really key. You know, I was going to bring up one thing because I know we got to take a break here in a moment, but you also talked about the angle of protection.
Yeah.
And as I read that, I was very cognizant of the fact that I have two dogs. Well, I have 18 dogs, but I have two that live in the house and I have two cats. My cats are totally confident around the dogs. They don't care. But my one dog is terribly afraid of either of the cats. Uh-huh. And so when I let her into the house from the backyard and she sees a cat that's in her pathway, uh-huh. she'll stop. She will not go. And all I have to do is stand between her and the cat.
Yeah.
And she'll go right past.
Become the blocker.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, I thought of that as I was reading, you know, your story about that. And it's really true. I mean, the dog is looking to you for the protection.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So in that scenario, it's a shy dog, and you're using it to make her feel calm and confident. And that's why she becomes a good dog. But if it's an excited dog, you can use that angle of protection, but flip it around. Flip your posture around, and now you're intercepting whatever is magnetizing their attention.
Yep.
And it's the same technique. It's the same line. It's the same game time play.
Yep. Right. But now you're using your vision, and you're looking at the dog, and you're getting the dog to be calm rather than go excited.
Yeah. And by the way, this is not a stare down. This is you make the eye contact, they give you a lip lick, and then you turn off the intensity. You become a gentleman.
Yes, because he acquiesced to your statement. Go ahead, Richard.
No, I've got to have to jump in because it's time for us to take another break. So everybody grab your favorite beverage while we tell you about Tuscany Bay Books. Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli from Tuscany Bay Books here. And if you're an author and you've just finished your manuscript, you just got the easy part done. There is editing, formatting, cover creation, marketing. The list goes on and on. But don't panic, because we're here. And we can do all of that for you so that you can focus on the most important thing, writing your next book. And if you're a reader looking for your next great read, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. We have books for the kids. We have mysteries. We have thrillers. We have westerns. And we have some of the best science fiction being written by award-winning science fiction authors who will tell you an entertaining story, not send you to your therapist with message fiction. So again, readers and writers, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and get ready to set sail on your next great adventure. All right, and we are back here on the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio with our guest, Jesse Sternberg. Jesse, let's kind of shift gears a little bit. I know Russ wants to get into kind of how you approached writing this book. Let me lead it off with what drove you to write this book?
Oh, my God. Now things are about to get weird.
Okay, we like weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Okay, well, I'm a spiritual guy to begin with. That's what got me into following my heart and opening up this daycare. And I sort of at the end of the life of the business, I was going through all kinds of personal stuff. I got myself out of my funk by drinking ayahuasca, way more ayahuasca than I think I knew what I was getting into in a pretty short period of time. And so I drank about 20 rounds in a year and a half, and I just became a completely different man. I sold my business. I got out of my marriage. And I was waiting for the next sign, literally at a yoga resort, living on a beach, practicing yoga, healing my soul. And then all of a sudden, lightning bolt, write a book. And I actually thought I was supposed to write some kind of wisdom book. I didn't know I was going to be writing a dog training book. I thought I was leaving that chapter behind me. I had a conversation with a book coach, which was a total synchronicity through social media. Turns out this guy and I had the same birthday, the same childhood accident. And he had drinking a ton of ayahuasca too. And as he's telling me all this stuff, my spine's getting tingles, 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 tingles. My crown's getting tingles, tingles, tingles. And I'm not a writer. I was a math guy. I pretty much faked my way through high school English, went to business school and faked my way through writing case studies. But if this was being asked of me, I thought, okay, I'm going to get some help. I'm going to work with some kind of coach who's, okay, this is a good synchronicity. Let's keep following this out a little bit. And, you know, in that honeymoon moment, when the adrenaline's pumping, the marathon doesn't look like a marathon at all. And I had already peeled, like I had already given myself infinite runway in front of me based on sort of my life. And I don't recommend that. That was a lot to navigate, and there are smoother ways to do it. But here I am on an adrenaline rush. I think I had a decent title and a table of contents, and I had nothing written down. And I think I burned through like all of my equity on my book coach, just making a first chapter and getting a first chapter out. I think that took 6 months, and it ended up being like the worst chapter of the book, if you ask me. But it was the first one. And if there's 15 chapters in the book, I bet you I wrote 60 to 70 chapters.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, as a writer, I know
each chapter had 4 or 5 versions before it was a final.
Right. Well, you always go back and you always edit and you always delete some things. I think every writer could fill a library with the chapters that have been written and not ever published.
Basically, you know, the first 35 chapters had way too much of my ego in it.
Ah, okay.
And the death of the ego is like it just keeps coming. It just keeps creeping in. It was really important for me to have a book that would resonate with just a regular Joe.
Yeah. Russ, go ahead.
No. I'm fascinated by this. And when it came down, since you're not a writer, except you are now, but you were not a writer when you started, was this writing coach, was he the one that helped you kind of organize and lay out how this book was going to flow from beginning to end? So
because
how'd you get there?
Actually, I ended up hating the guy for like 2 years. Okay? We pushed each other's buttons, man. And he said, like, but because I trusted that resonance on that first call,
right.
And he said something to me that just really like I hung on to. Like he's like, I'll be Phil Jackson if you think you're Michael Jordan. And I went, okay, you know what? That was the right thing to say to me, because Michael Jordan's my fucking idol, and I know what it's going to take. I can grind it out. And so what ended up happening, by the way, he and I have a ton of respect for each other right now. It's been like 4 years. We've grown a ton together. His name's Johnny Angel. I recommend him big time. It took me a rhythm to figure out, like, what's a cool chapter? Well, a cool chapter has these characters that go through a growth, that go through, get a eureka moment that where their dog gets fixed. So it's like, all right, well, how do you make that interesting? Oh, you have to have adjectives and adverbs, and you can't have sentences that are too long. And the dog has to be a real problem that every single dog owns. All right, here's what's cool about the book. Practically every single behavior in the book, no one's calling a dog trainer for. My dog barked 25 times at the pizza guy, but he's fine now. It's been 3 minutes. No one's calling a dog trainer for that. But if you knew how to fix that in 2 seconds, and you knew you could do it on your 7-year-old dog because you've actually been using your body language to miscommunicate and to inappropriately praise the wrong behaviors, and you didn't realize you could actually counter condition something in about 6 minutes. Okay. Cool. We beefed the book up a little bit by adding a cool meditation to each chapter, which talks about, you know, how to get into the kind of state of consciousness that your dog has. Your dog's not speaking English, so stop chit-chatting. You know, a lot of people don't really know how to be comfortable how to get comfortable in a non-chit-chatty mind. A lot of people would love to have it, but let me tell you, once you learn how to get it and then you start doing a bit of a dog training program with your dog from that mind state, it's like it's the best therapy in the world. For you and your dog.
I think I'm going to call you when I go to write my book.
Yeah, I think I'll be staying up at your dog ranch.
There you go. You know, I was going to ask you, do you guys hear any dogs barking while we've been talking? Mm-hmm. I am within 50 feet of 40 dogs right now. Wow. I actually do hear one barking, but I guess, well, I put my noise limiter on too, but
no, that's
but impressive. Really, it's pretty amazing that when the dogs are in a state of calmness, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. They all can exist and not have to bark. You also mentioned something I'm going to say real quick. You mentioned about counter conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the keys, especially for people who had one of the things they do call trainers about a lot is aggression, whether it's aggressive behavior toward people or toward dogs. Mm-hmm. Most often it's toward dogs. Mm-hmm. And they don't know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned counter conditioning, and I think that's a little more to get in than we could get into in the show here. But that is it. If are you familiar with the book Feisty Fido by Patricia McConnell?
No. Okay. I'll put it on the radar.
Great book as far as being able to understand the techniques and philosophies of counter conditioning and desensitization so that you can teach the dog. They don't have to like other dogs. They don't have to like people. They just have to be well-mannered around them. And it's a go ahead.
Yeah, we don't even need to talk counter conditioning because I actually don't even get into that in the book. I get into mm-hmm. body language. And if you have a dog that's aggressive with other dogs on the leash, do this one thing. Instead of walking in a straight line at that dog, which is amplifying the fear factor of the forbidden angle, try walking around that dog in a semicircle, which is what the dogs would do if they were unleashed. They would want to get to the back of the other dog for a bum sniff. They would go to great lengths to not come at the dog face to face. So, you know, usually people who have a dog that's going to do that lunging thing, so people can see six times further, more clear than the dog can see. So you can see your dog, what your dog's trigger is before your dog can. And take a mindful moment when that's happening because you're probably panicking instead of realizing you got about 5 seconds before your dog sees what you just saw. But if you're panicking, well, what does that say when the leader gets scared? Okay. And when the leader gets scared, I'm shitting my pants too. In fact, I might even defend my leader if I'm of that type of mindset. That might be what the communication actually is interpreted as. So if that's the communication that your dog's thinking and you're feeling that feeling and you're winding your leash up, you're giving a scared dog who just wants to move away nowhere to go. You're putting it in a corner kind of situation. Of course, it's the most dangerous kind of dog. And, you know, don't feel guilty. That's because it's all on you. But it's all on you. So instead,
it's true though. You're absolutely right.
It's not you. It's you.
Instead, try this. You got 5 seconds. Do a semicircle approach. A smooth walking semicircle around it, and you know, keep a corner of your eye on your dog. Is your dog staring at that dog? If not, you're in great shape.
Yeah. Okay, guys, we got to jump in here and get our last commercial break in. So sit back and let's hear about Creative Edge Publicity.
Okay, you've written a book. How are you going to get your name out there? Well, the folks at Creative Edge Publicity will. That's their job. They aren't going to sell your book. They don't want to sell your book, but they will take your brand from the ground up so you are known in your genre and within the writer's community. They'll do this by using relationships with contacts they've made in TV, in radio, podcasts, and publishing to get your name and your brand recognized. So why are you waiting? Contact Creative Edge Publicity at www.creative-edge.services or email Mickey Mickelson at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com. Creative Edge, it's your work and it's your brand. Why would you trust it to anyone else? Creative Edge Publicity.
All right, and we are back here on the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio with our guest, Jesse Sternberg. Jesse, we've got about 5 minutes left in the show, so I want to ask you, this is your first book, and it sounds like it was quite the project to tackle. So is this something that you're going to do again? Are we going to see any more books from Jesse Sternberg?
You are. It's already pouring out of me. I've got a title and a table of contents I've already pitched to the publisher, and they like the idea. It's called Unleashed.
I wonder what it's about. So because of that answer, we get to ask you the question, do you ever get writer's block? And if you do,
oh yeah.
How do you beat it?
Now that I'm a writer, here's my process, okay? I only go to the keyboard when I'm juiced with inspiration.
Okay.
And I can get 1,200, 1,500 words out in about 45 minutes, which are mostly coherent. And then I just go about the rest of my day, and I may not come back to the finish off the chapter. I have a process. I first design a table of contents that are about, you know, 15 to 20, 10 to 20 milestones I want to go through. And then each chapter, I take a minute and I do a skeleton on it. Here are the characters. Here's the storyline. Here are the lessons. Here's the meditation. And then I don't touch it. I just train dogs. I see my kids. I exercise. I do my life. And then all of a sudden, one morning, I just feel this call to the computer. I pull up the doc, and I'm not writing it alone. I'm writing it, you know, with my soul. My soul's telling me when to go into it. I'm not forcing it. I forced a lot of it the first 2 years of my book. But I was learning the art.
Yeah, I found if you force it, you're not going to have something you're going to like. And there's no shame in stepping away and, you know, kind of getting off on something else and reset and come back when you're ready and let it rip. Russ, you got anything you want to add in here before we start wrapping up?
Yeah. You look better without the beard.
Thanks. Okay. Appreciate that.
No, this has been great. And I want to tell you that I appreciate your book.
Thank you.
Because, you know, for all the years I've been training, a lot of it has been a battle against the old style training. And so many people, not as much today, but 10, 15 years ago, people had been using choke chains and pinch collars, and it was all about control and not about teaching the dog and not about communicating with the dog. And people are getting more on board with that idea. And this, I think, is a big step forward in that. So I think you've done a great job.
Thank you very much.
Jesse, where can people find you online and find out when your next book is coming out?
Yeah, check out my website, peacefulalpha.com. I've got links to all the Amazons, links for the old book and all kinds of info about my courses, how to work with me, communicate with me, connect with me via social.
Okay. Well, if you've got a dog that needs some help and you're a dog owner who needs some help, it sounds like we've got the book for you, and Jesse has done a great job writing it. I think it's got the seal of approval from our resident dog trainer.
Thank you.
I think Russ, two thumbs up, or in this case, two paws up.
There you go, two paws up.
All right, okay. Jesse, thank you again for being on. You've been a great guest, and we've had a lot of fun tonight and gleaned a lot of information tonight, which I will be putting to use on my two house hounds as soon as we get off the show here. Next week, our guest is a returning guest, and it's a guest we enjoy having on the show. J.R. Sanders is back, and he's got a new book called Dead Bang Fall. I wonder what J.R. has written this time, huh? Should be a good read, should be a great show. Hopefully, Jim will be back. Bobby Jean will return from doing whatever it is she does when she's roaming around Albuquerque. I don't know. I don't want to know. I will be back, assuming my dogs don't drive me crazy. But in the meantime, thank you again, Jesse, for being on the show. Russ, thank you for writing in the co-pilot chair for me tonight.
Been a pleasure.
And on behalf of Jim, who is on the mend, and our engineer back in Los Angeles on the 58th floor of the LA Talk Radio building that towers over Los Angeles, as well as the bookie without whom this show does not happen, we wish them all well and all get better, and we are out of here.
You're listening to Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Richard Polinelli, only on LA Talk Radio.